my guest in the studio tonight is ARIA Award winning and APRA nominated artist, composer, producer, record label owner and session bassist. He's had 2 decades of national and international touring experience from original projects such as the Java Quartet, Karma County and the Millionaires, to providing bass for artists such as Indigenous legend Jimmy Little and international festival chanteuse Camille O'Sullivan. Michael Galeazzi, welcome to Now's the Time.
Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, Frank.
Can we go all the way back, firstly, and can you tell us why you call the group the Java Quartet?
It was a nickname of mine, Java, you know, because of bad posture. They used to call me Java Man, like Australopithecus.
Right.
Australis or whatever, you know, knuckle walker.
Okay.
Maybe certain times of a Saturday night, you know.
What have you been up to in the last 5 years? It was back in, I think, July 05, not long before this one, In the Swim, was released that we last spoke. And I guess, can you tell us briefly, what have you been up to in those 5 years?
Second born, Jamie, he's actually turning 5, November 17, so that was a couple of months later. I went back and did a little bit of postgrad work, you know, back at the con.
Mm-hmm.
Working, playing, I suppose. Working on this sucker. You know, being, for the radio audience out there, the Java Quartet's Rejuvenation album is a remix album. A couple of new tunes, but, you know, revisiting back catalogue, looking down the line of my musical life.
Now, when you say remix, it doesn't actually consist of remixing of the actual original recordings, does it?
Reconstruction. Deconstruction and reconstruction is a better term. But remix, I suppose it's like marketing, it's another jargon, that's why I use the remixing kind of tag. But it was pulling apart the tunes, reassembling them and getting the soloists to re-solo over the new beds.
Now, In the Swim, the album that we just heard, essentially an acoustic album, as were your previously releases prior to that. And this one in particular, I think, from memory, was recorded acoustically in the round. This new one, Rejuvenation, is virtually totally opposite to that. What I'd like to know is, what made you decide to go in that direction for Java, given that you'd released six albums in that acoustic setting to date?
I've always loved dance music and electronic music. And as a part of my research, I was looking at the similarities of hypnotic music, and hypnotic music's found in repetition and new and old traditions of repetition, and toying with a romantic vision of the Hindustani tradition, as well as the hypnotic repetition of dance music and DJ culture, which I was kind of spawned of from the late 80s and early 90s, you know, when I was my misspent youth of No Tomorrows at dance parties and raves. Actually, probably pre-raves, actually, in the late 80s. Yeah, going to see Jackie Ozarski and down at the Horden Pavilion in, like, 1986 with the Rock Melons and DJs inside these events hosted by the RAT team, the Recreational Arts team in Sydney. And, looking down the barrel of that sort of musical genealogy, I was just sort of, it's almost like a bit of Spike Milligan Open Heart University. the collection of poems he's got. Uh-huh. We're just having a look back at and that's what they do at the con, you know, at a lot of this research, is say, you know, asking why and tracing back and looking at relationships that developed. And it all kind of started with Wedding Song, you know, off that first EP, which was recorded in 1994, which is like very much influenced by the Necks, you know, and that was going on in the late 90s, this amalgamation of minimalism and repetition and improvisation. And really the Java Quartet was spawned after a series they did at the old Darlington School.
It's interesting you should mention that, because currently you're the artist of the month on the website jazzandbeyond.com.au.
Oh.
And you list the Necks as being one of 5 gigs that are quite influential on your your music
aesthetic.
Aesthetic or ethos, yes. And so that, and I think you've listed that as number one, the next. And of course, as far as hypnotic music is concerned, they're really up there, aren't they, the next?
Absolutely. And they're you know, they're very much aware of, you know, all genres. You know, they're not exclusive to the jazz improvised kind of thing. And anyway, that's where that sort of just jumping into the digital or cyber domain. And I think it's kind of important to dip your toe there because, you know, as an artist, you try and remain contemporary. And I think whether you accept it or reject it, you really need to, you know, react to this cyber environment, which is like, it's like a hall of mirrors, this digital and media age. And I suppose having a couple of kids and watching them, you know, zip it up on their iPods and take YouTube for granted and have access to any generation of any music for free has really made me think about these kind of issues, especially delving into a project like this, you know, bringing the humanized improviser into this digital domain, which is a landscape of lies. Really, all digital information can be manipulated whatever way.
Yes.
So it's kind of nice to you know, get Greg and Mike and Matt, you know, to play some real things over my lying beds, as it were. Yes, yeah, very much a la Ronnie Size and Represent. I don't know, they came out of Bristol around 91. And he was one of the first guys to use real acoustic double bass. One of the first to you know, rise to the surface of the dance underground.
Okay.
Like with Ron Carter with A Tribe Called Quest.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
That, around that kind of time as well.
Uh-huh. So that's sort of moving into your acid jazz sort of...
just pre, I reckon, yeah, you know. Yeah, just, yeah. You know, when I know Dig Out Here and Multiple were great in picking up on that thing.
Michael, what's been the reaction like so far to the new album?
It's been very positive, yes.
What can I say? It's been interesting because it is a studio project with all the technology involved. And so you have to employ a tactic to bring it to the stage and make it live. And I've been really fortunate. When I have done performances at Jazz Groove at the old venue and in workshops at the conservatorium where we've performed these songs with a laptop performer, a guy called Jonathan Palmer, who's my kind of partner in crime on this disc. He's been doing all the engineering and he did cut a lot of those beats on that last track.
Uh-huh.
But for this tour this year in August, we did a little national tour, the Rejuvenation Tour, and rather than go down that angle, we brought it a little bit back into the human domain, or even the jazz domain, for want of a better word, and I was really fortunate that a hip-hop producer, a beatboxer and freestyler, and b-boy dancer, and I'm not sure if he does graff, I don't know, but if he did, he'd be a king, because that's all four sweets, and there's not many kings out there in Australia in the hip-hop world. But anyway, the godfather of Australian hip-hop, he joined us on the tour and did a lot of beatboxing, and he even did some spoken word and rapping on the tracks, and Bobby Singh on tabla came aboard, and he's on a couple of these tracks as well. And instead of having technology, we had more people in the rhythm section to give that layering of beats, which is, you know, synonymous with DJ and dance culture, which is not what the album's about, but, you know, just for that oomph and the live and to recreate these electronic versions or reconstructions of the material.
Back in 2005, you mentioned at the time that, you know, you're rather partial to Indian ragas, and it's interesting now that you're sort of going back to that. You've got Bobby Singh on this album. What is it about Indian music that really attracts you?
You know what? I think my relationship to jazz is born of the modal stuff. You know, the Miles Davis, Coltrane, Wayne Shorter, even the groovy Blue Note sides. And that music is post-bop, and the structures have been diluted to make room for polyrhythmic grooves. And, you know, some intense layering, overlaying of harmony, melodic ideas and scale ideas. And sometimes I think that's almost like a modern version of the Hindustani template, which is drone and melody and rhythm. And I can see a lot of relationships there. I remember reading that great writer on Coltrane's life, Porter, and he notes that, you know, the relationship between Coltrane and Elvin Jones, when they go, for a time they were doing long stints where they'd go two out, you know, and that's very much like a tabla and a sitar player or a tabla and a vocalist, and having this relationship, rhythmic and melodic, without the chordal information. And I think there's a potency of note when you just have a drone or like a didgeridoo or a gamelan orchestra, or when you have melody and drone and you have the melody player creating lines and of emotional content, and I don't know, I just like it.
And of course that the idea of the drone brings in that hypnotic effect again, doesn't it?
And it opens up, I think that opens up the ears of the listener to be able to chew the melodic lines, to really digest them and give the lines the focus they deserve. Sometimes all these cascading, fast-running chords just kind of get in the way.
So it's almost like keeping it simple, which is really what you've been doing ever since Java started, isn't it?
That's all I got, Frank. That's all I got.
It's going to be back to acoustic for number 7.
Well, let's see. Look, you know what? I've been really fortunate to have a great spate of writing. I think once the album was birthed and out there, you know, that's a big release. You know, it opened up all this space for more and more ideas. And I've got to say, at the Darwin Festival, we just went up as a quartet. So after doing all these big gigs with 6 people on stage, or, you know, and last time at 505, I was fortunate to have Linda, the vocalist, and Adrian McNeil, the sarod player, up on stage as well. And we're doing a couple of extra tracks each. But we went up and we just went back to the quartet. And it was really invigorating. It really was. You know, we've been playing for years. And then after doing all these different arrangements, we came back to the catalogue just as a quartet, and they're all different.
Mm.
You know, coming back to the tunes, it was really beautiful. Although, you know, we had a rehearsal last week, and we're playing. We've got new material. We've got 4 new charts for this Saturday, which is really exciting. But then, you know, we're discussing, maybe some tabla would be good on this one. You know, there's all, you know, it doesn't stop, and it's never finite, and there's never nevers kind of thing. But I suppose just as the remix, for want of a better word, album was different to the albums beforehand, I think after this kind of a remix album, you really got to go back to the antithesis again. You know, it's like that.
I get the impression it's something that you had to do, but it may not necessarily be the future for the Java.
Oh, it never was, really. It was a recording project. It was like a quarter of my master's program, so it was like, you know, bonus. But it's something I'm still, you know, I used to love dance culture, and I still do, and I love popular culture, and I like good DJ tracks, and I suppose it was an expression of bringing them in together.
There's a track on here which would quite easily be, you know, a charting track in Linda Jansen, Only You.
You know what? And that is exactly the jazz tradition. That's where all our tunes came from. Mm. Or, you know, they all came from the movies from the 30s and 40s. You know, they were just hip guys playing really cool tunes. So, you know, it's funny why, you know, I was thinking about why I put that there. And, you know, you cross those sort of things. But it is, you know, the popular vernacular, which is, you know, what you're kind of saying, is where our tradition comes from. You know what? We can't sell our music anymore, because once it's released, it's uploaded digitally and it's for everyone. But I think the idea that the music's out there for everyone has invigorated interest, because there's access. Mm. So people want to see it, because that's what the music's all about. It's about actually the energy between the band and the audience, no matter what genre it is.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I think the idea of everyone gets the music for free, so they'll show their appreciation for artists by actually supporting them in a live sense.
Now, of course, you've been around for how many years now, like in formation? 14, 15 years?
Yeah, now? Yes, 94.
Yeah.
Recorded our first EP. And then 95, it's Mike Quigley and Greg Coffin and I, and then around 2000. Matt was there, 2002.
I think I first started playing on radio at a station up in Taree called 2 Bob. And that was Slumber for Nordic Wonder. That was the Bjork album, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. My fascination with Bjork. It's all come from the popular milieu.
Michael, look, thanks very much for joining us in the studio tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.